Hello everybody and welcome to episode 35 of Learn With Us. Today my guest is Giuseppe from Italy and he is based in Vienna. He is pretty much a front-end developer like me, but he is he's an expert in CSS and he has some libraries, open source libraries around dynamic CSS. So today is going to pretty much focus around him and his work with CSS. So how are you doing today, Giuseppe?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, mate. Thanks for having me, how are you?
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. How's your week gone so far in Vienna?
Quite good, actually. I came back from vacation on Sunday and got some heat wave, but now it's getting colder and chill, so hoping for the best. But yeah, pretty good, thanks.
Cool. Have you got quite a cool apartment or house or...?
Yeah, it's a bit like a residential area in Vienna, so more like on the outsides, but not that far from the city center. It's really nice.
Cool. And so, how would you describe yourself as a front end developer in your career?
Yeah. I'm Italian, and I grew up in Sicily, and in a small town, right? And the cool thing about web development and how I got into it is that I feel like programming is like the universal equalizer, right? You, from the small town, you could get anywhere, like thanks to the web, and that's what I started. I got a degree in computer science, and in 2010 I left Italy, and I've been living abroad since then. And yeah, so I've kind of, at this point, I think about 10 years of professional experience in web development, like front end. I've done some full stack JavaScript most recently. But yeah, most of the time I've been focusing on front end, but I had broader interest in other technologies and back end as well, as well as networking, security, and those kind of things. So yeah, basically a 10-year professional experience, but I've been doing computer stuff for a long while.
Nice. So tell us about this open source library, DSS, or deterministic style sheets.
Oh yeah, so as I said, I've been working with CSS for a while. At some point, I was working at Yelp. I don't know if you heard of Yelp, yeah. And I was basically part of their core front-end team, and we were using methodologies like BEM-like methodologies and stuff like that, and still sometimes struggling with managing CSS at scale.
What's big? What's that Big Bang-like thing?
Oh, that's like a basically a methodology that basically the term stands for block element modifier, and it's a methodology that was, I think, invented by Yandex, the search engine, the Russian search engine. And so basically a way to organize CSS in a modular way, specifically in a component-based way, where each of those three parts would describe a specific piece of the UI component. So you have a button, and you have the block there will be maybe called dot button, right?
Yeah.
And then the element will be a descend, if there is any. So button dash icon, for example.
So is this a methodology that can be used without a framework like React or Svelte? Standard?
Yeah. That's correct. Basically, you could use it, just open a editor, like write some CSS, save it, and you can use it anywhere. That's been like it's very popular. There are plenty of examples of company who succeeded using it, but it's still like some kind of methodology, and it's like of course it can be enforced with linters and stuff, but it's far from being the perfect solution. And at some point, some folks with the rise of Webpack came up with this thing called CSS modules. I'm pretty sure many have heard of them. And basically, they figured that they could avoid writing those using a convention, and instead of having tools enforcing scoping in a way, because BEM is also used to have some clear, you know, naming scheme and avoid, you know, some in a way like we used to use namespaces in JavaScript before we got modules, right? So module CSS modules is great. It's been used by many companies as well, and many still use. I in fact use it at work as well, and but it still comes with some downsides there. And one of those is that resolve is not able because of the CSS, because of CSS and the cascade styles are not guaranteed to resolve deterministically. And by that I mean whenever you import things from different files, like in this case it's a class, right? Because CSS module, you write CSS using classes, which then you can import in the most popular target is JavaScript, but it can be any other language.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever you import from different files, then the concatenation and the order of those files could depend on many factors. But you know that in CSS, the order is important.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have issues where specificity issues and just order cascading issues rather, and so some things override others and all that. Or imagine when you pass classes around, for example, in Vue, React, or Angular, any other framework, passing CSS classes down to other components, you don't exactly know where, in which order. The CSS is declared. And so with DSS, which is an experiment, it's nothing, you know, production ready, or it's just an experiment I was doing. It. I wanted to kind of solve this issue and like have don't have any so that you don't have problems of this kind.
Sure.
And the way how I did it is basically it's similar to CSS modules, so you still write CSS pretty much the same way, but then the compiler can convert every CSS declaration that is, for example, display block into an atomic class, right?
Okay.
And you get basically when in your HTML when you import button from button or stuff like that, you get a reference of to an array of those classes.
Okay.
And when you combine them together, those are merged in a way that makes sense, and it's always obvious to the developer.
Okay.
So basically, you convert every your 100 CSS files to atomic CSS classes, and so basically you get a final bundle that is super small, because if you have I don't know 50 occurrences of display block, that will be basically reduced to one.
Really?
Yeah, that's the beauty of CSS, atomic CSS, and there are many popular solutions out there like Tachyons or I don't know, there are plenty.
Okay.
And so basically you end up with a very tiny bundle, and then with this mechanism the library provides to then consume those styles.
Okay, so that's what your DSS project is.
Yeah, it's you started with a like lengthy with a question that required a kind of a lengthy response, and sorry if it took too long, but
okay. I'll link dss-lang.com in the show notes so people can go on there and read about it.
Yeah.
Do people write it in the flavor of CSS, or they can write nesting like Sass or Less or Stylus or Post CSS?
So the thing is that one of the constraint is that the kind of specificity of selector, so the complexity of there should be very simple and shallow, mostly just single class name or class name hover, class name focus. But otherwise, yes, you can use Sass, Less to use, I don't know, mixings, functions, colors, variables.
Okay.
And it works exactly like a, you know, incremental step. You first compile it with Sass, and then you use the DSS compiler. But this is just an experiment. I never managed to then, you know, move it outside of the, you know, experimental stage.
Right.
Because it's just for fun.
Yeah. I'm in the mindset now that the less code is better. So when I'm writing Svelte stuff, I found that Svelte, what it does is that outside the box, if you write style in the Svelte component, it will generate a unique class name.
Right.
And then it will then add that to the elements, and then it will output that class name as a CSS file.
Yeah, that's great. In fact, now that you mentioned, to say, I'm also the co-author of a instead more popular CSS and JS library that is called Style.js6. And this is the one that is comes with by default with Next.js from Zeit.
Right.
So I've been the maintainer and co-owner more or less from the beginning, when I met Jermo Rausch, which is the creator of the library, and basically works exactly like Svelte. In fact, at some point, I think Svelte got inspired by this and the way also how Vue.js does sculpt styles.
Mm-hmm.
And there are similarities.
What was that library called that you made again?
It's Styled.js6.
Styled.js6.
Okay. It's at github.com/Zeit/style.js6.
Okay, I'll link it to the show notes so people can go on there and.
Yeah, and this is specific to React though, and basically it lets you write a classic style tag within your JS6. So you have some elements and you put a style tag inside of it with it just had a JS6 attribute to it, and it will magically sculpt the styles to the.
It's got almost 5,000 stars. Nice one.
Yeah, it's. I think the popularity is mostly because comes from the fact that it's the default in Next.js. You don't have to use it, but it's Next.js for context is the framework, React framework for server-side rendering, rendered application.
So just to let you know, people, Style.js6, of which Giuseppe is the author of, is used by 36,000 other projects on GitHub.
I think at this point it's fairly mature. There are some things that could be improved, but some other that they're just fine. And I think many people and many companies use the library and think with fairly great success. I think if I had to name some companies, probably I think I've seen for sure Zeit, and then Hulu, the streaming video streaming company, the US, I think even Nike at some point, and I mean there are plenty. I never compile a list.
Yeah. So how is the maintenance burden for such a large project these days for you?
So the library, right, it's fairly small in scope, in a way, if you will. And at the beginning it was fine. Initially it's more like bug fixing, then it becomes, you know, feature requests and things like that. And so there were times where it was a bit it required some more time than I had, because, you know, I would maintain it in my spare time.
Sure.
But nowadays, it's, as I said, it's fairly stable, and there are sometimes just small bugs and things like that.
Right.
So I don't spend too much time on it.
So is this project only around React, or is it something that could be used by other
Yeah,
frameworks?
unfortunately, yeah, unfortunately, it's just React.
Okay. Well,
At the
just React
moment.
is a big chunk of the pie, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. So, given that you're a CSS expert, what would you say is the future of CSS in the just in general?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm an expert, but I've been working with it for a while, and I mean, now I do other things, but I think the future in reality is kind of blurry at this moment. I mean, we have CSS 3, which is quite mature. Over time, we got Flexbox, which made things much easier compared to the old times where, you know, making layouts were quite painful. And now even CSS Grid. So I think people is, and even like not just individuals, but even companies like Chrome, like Google with Chrome, the Chrome team, are trying to figure out where what are the developers' needs, the community needs, and there was Shadow DOM. There is Shadow DOM. It's not a thing from the past. That solves the encapsulation problem, so like scope, style, and things like that. But it's probably not. He's not as popular as it could have been, because it's not capable to support server-side rendering. So there are still a lot of open questions around whether we need a different solution. But yeah, definitely in the future, we're gonna need probably some way of, you know, scoping styles and things like that. I think that could help a lot, if only just to remove a bunch of, you know, user-land solutions and just have a robust solution in the web platform itself. And the other, I think, would be, I don't know, maybe just some way of making it easier to distribute CSS, because nowadays we don't have a really way to distribute CSS. When you build a library, JavaScript library or whatever, it's kind of tricky. And I know that the Chrome team is starting to work together with Microsoft, the Edge team. They're starting to work on a thing called CSS modules, which is unfortunate because the name is going to clash.
Yeah, it's going to cause a lot of confusion.
Yeah. But my understanding, and I hope I'm not wrong, is that this is more like a new module type, and so more like a way to manage and load and distribute CSS, rather, and it's not going to provide any scoping or something encapsulation.
Right. So is that what the Shadow DOM solve a lot of things about scoping that your people are solving by themselves with generating class names?
Yeah, exactly. And the reason for that, I think, is that so the Shadow DOM is like client side only, and it requires JavaScript. But many people have the requirement to, they need their application to be server side rendered.
Right.
And therefore there, so basically there is this distinction between light DOM, which is the DOM as we all know it, like HTML, and the shadow DOM. And I feel like many would rather have a solution that works in the light DOM.
Right,
So
yeah.
it could also be, it could also be rendered on the server.
Yeah, I only ever played about with the web components when I was playing with Polymer, but I just didn't really see that much of the point of it and just went back to doing, React as normal.
I mean, there are obviously different approaches building things in the browser for everybody. To solve many use cases is much harder than just building an opinionated library. But I don't know. Seems like it's still not the ultimate solution. It's definitely cool and useful for many use cases. I've used them myself in cases, but they still don't cover the whole spectrum, and therefore there are user-land libraries. Probably there will always be, anyway.
CSS has come on so much further than back in 2007, where we had to use special names to get i6 PNGs transparent, and also including a library for that. And nowadays, people don't know how easy they've got it, really. They have no idea.
Well, it's great. I mean, that they don't have to bother about this. And I mean, the next major step for the web community will be to have a more compact platform where maybe the feature parity across vendors is a core feature, and you don't have to deal with cross-browser incompatibilities and things like that. That's a dream.
Yeah. So going back to dynamic deterministic CSS, who is that, who does that benefit the most that you found?
So as I said, it's just side project, and so there's no real world application to at the moment. It, as I said, I built it to be kind of similar to CSS modules, and because I think it could solve some issues, but there are others that I'm aware of that could somehow put other obstacles along the way. So we'll definitely need some validation. And but instead, to give you a more practical example of a similar solution that is more JavaScript focused at the moment, but which is instead used in the real world, I can give you the Twitter.com. The new Twitter.com website is built with React Native for Web,
Okay.
which is this like web implementation of the React Native APIs. It's a bit of a, back and forth.
Why would anyone want to do that?
Because apparently the React Native folks, because of the cross platform thing, figure out a good set of APIs that are pretty solid, and with that also they came up with a interesting styling solution that is basically the one I got inspiration from, and is. It's like the API is called Style Sheet, which is very I think Nothing crazy, not fancy names there, but basically the styles are written like in a similar way, like you wrote rules but in JavaScript objects. And the difference is that with my library is that there's not support for pseudo states, you know, over pseudo selector and classes, like over focus or even complex selector, like, you know, a child selector, descendant selector. And this might seem like, so you just have one rules defining some styles like dot button and red, a color red, font size 10 pixel, whatever. And then the way how they use it is that basically they treat the styles as a like a function of state, like React does for the UI, right?
Okay.
So basically, over state, focus state, press state, and whatnot, or, you know, disabled, all those kind of things, as basically the result of applying conditionally those styles.
Okay.
And this is basically giving you full control over CSS. There are no side effects. Like, even over is a side effect in CSS, if you think about it. And styles resolve, in addition to that, they resolve deterministically, because basically at any point in time, you have those styles. That's basically how it works.
Okay.
And it's very nuts. And it works apparently for iOS, Android, and for web in Twitter.com, which has been built with this framework.
Cool. I'll have to re-listen to this section again to get in my head and look over some of the docs on that.
I hope it's not too confusing.
No, it's the more confused I am, the better, because it means that the podcast is reaching the right level. So this podcast is as much technical detail and specialization and hard as possible, because it's a pure tech podcast. The other one I've got, Influencers Cafe, it's more entrepreneurial actors, and it's kind of this can be technical, as you know, if someone wants to come talk about machine code that they wrote and go 10111010111, it's fine with me, you know.
Cool. Yeah, in fact, I've heard a few, listened to some episodes that are really nice. Like it was interesting, the one in recruiting and
the latest one.
Yeah, and as you said, they go like deep into any details on the topic.
Yeah, we'll do another one with Reese probably once Brexit happens, to see whether his crystal ball was a real crystal or a cheap knockoff from China.
Okay, yeah, that's. I mean, I don't feel like making prediction for CSS as well, and probably I will be retired by the time those prediction can be whether proved right or wrong. So, but yeah, definitely. Maybe Brexit will happen at some point.
Web development is such a huge topic. I mean, you could spend, you've pretty much, your whole open source career has revolved around almost CSS. And
oh yeah, but the fun fact is that this is, at this point, it's more like, or at least for the past few years, it's been more like of a side thing for me, passion.
Yeah.
I do, as you said, it could be many things, and now I'm more like focused on framework, library tools, and I still do UI development, of course,
mm-hmm.
but that my hair and interested kind of moved a bit.
Yeah, all of us open source people, even with like over 100 followers or getting there, we still need to have a day job a lot of the time, because open source just does not pay unless you're like,
yeah,
you know, you've
unless you're, you build up online presence and have a substantial follower base and people want to support you. Yeah.
Okay, so where Where do you sort of see yourself in 2 or 3 years' time or 5 years' time?
Right. Well, probably in a few years, I don't know. 2 or 3 are not that many, although there can be, you know, ages in tech. I suppose I will be still doing some kind of software development thing, but in the long term, probably I would like to build something of my own.
Yeah.
And not like to build the next startup. 500, you know, companies, top mm-hmm. companies, but more like for us to, you know, to have this independent, to yeah. be a bit more independent and just like basically go back to what I was doing before graduating, side project that would
yeah.
make
the dream
passive income and
the dream of side projects. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I had a few of them, you know, before I graduated from university, and was making some money on the side, and I felt great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Giuseppe, what is the best way for people that want to get in touch with you, maybe ask some questions, you know, consulting around CSS?
I think because of my name is and my unfortunate choice to use it in full on social media, it's also there. But I think the best way to go to find me is at Giuseppe GIUSEPPE dot pizza, which is my domain.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes.
And there are links there to everything, like Twitter, GitHub, there to my personal blog, and my DMs are open on Twitter, and you can find me there.
Cool. I'll just mute my ending track that came on there. <That's> that <off. laughs> It's okay, I caught it just in time. At least I don't have FaceTime ringing when I'm on here. I put my phone on busy. When you're recording computer audio, you get every single piece of audio from the computer comes onto your guest track, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm just like going to close the window because myself it's going to be hot, but I'm not going to compromise the audio.
Yeah. All right. Have you got any closing thoughts you want to share with the audience?
I don't know. I guess just be curious, keep an open mind, like explore new things like I like to do every once in a while, and then yeah, just have fun.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, Giuseppe. And I wish
Thank you
I'll probably catch up with you for lunch sometime when I'm in the country. So thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, man.
See y'all later.